Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, the new Fine Gael leader has dismissed opposition calls to abandon the upcoming hate speech legislation. Simon Harris rejected the demand from Sinn Féin, which said the bill is not fit for purpose. It seeks to clarify and update the laws around hate speech and bring them into an online age. On the line is Senator Barry Ward of Fine Gael, also Vice Chair of the Oireachtas Justice Committee, and Sinn Féin TD Pa Daly and Party spokesperson on justice. Thanks to you both for joining us this morning. Barry, we'll start off with you just to outline for people who are maybe not aware what hate speech legislation is all about and what it aims to do. You might tell us.
Well, as you may know, Owen, there is a piece of legislation from 1989 called the Prohibition on Hate, on the Incitement of Hatred Act. And it's totally out of date. If you think about it, it was passed at a time when we didn't all have the internet in our pockets. And a long time ago, a decision was made that we needed to update that legislation, which also hasn't been effective for the purposes of prosecutions. Only 50 people have been prosecuted in 30 years. So the bill that's currently going through the Oireachtas is the solution to that problem. And it sets out a number of what are called protected characteristics. So there are particular groups who are protected. They include people of in relation to their ethnic origin, their gender identity, their race, their religion. There's a whole load of characteristics set out in Section 3. And essentially what it does is it says that it's an offence for somebody to incite hatred against one of those groups or incite violence against one of those groups. And that's really what the bill does. It's something that has gone through the door, and it was supported by Sinn Féin, by the way, at all stages so far, including in that second stage of the Shannon. And it is something that's caused a little bit of controversy because there are some groups who say that it's essentially impinging on our right to free speech. And the reality is, free speech is always qualified anyway. Nobody is allowed to say whatever they want, whenever they want. There are always restrictions on that. And we say that this is a reasonable restriction on your right to free speech, because if you're using your right to free speech to do down and persecute other people, then that's not reasonable.
Okay. Sinn Féin spokesperson on justice, Pa Daly, is also with us, as I say, and he's demanding that the government scrap their hate speech legislation, as he says, and the party says, it's not fit for purpose. Pa, as Barry Ward has just outlined there, Sinn Féin supported this at all stages and now are saying it's not fit for purpose. Is this not the U-turn of all U-turns?
Good morning, and good morning to all listeners in Kildare. It's interesting that Simon Harris has been out saying that they weren't going to scrap it on the same number, same weekend that the minister is saying that she will be introducing some amendments, and the devil would be in the detail there. I agree to some extent with a lot of what Barry has said. There are a lot of good intentions behind this bill. It's not acceptable that if you are of colour or from a traveller background or if you're LGBT, that you should be subjected to, you know, violence or hatred. And I think and I believe that that is worse than any random type attack, and it should not be tolerated. And it is also correct to say that we did support this bill, when it was going through the Oireachtas in the various stages, up until the Shannon, when we indicated that we were voting against it. Now, because the government, obviously, in the Shannon, with the Taoiseach's nominations and all of that, have a weighted majority, but we indicated our opposition to it in the Shannon.
Why did you oppose it?
Okay, while there are good intentions behind it, the implementation is badly thought through, and we think that parts of it are disproportionate, other parts of it are lacking in clarity. And when we were raising questions and queries in relation to it at various stages, including in the Justice Committee, Simon Harris, in fact, himself was standing in for Helen McEntee in the Justice Committee, and he promised to examine the objections and suggestions that we were having. He promised to reflect on it, and he said that I am sure that the minister will listen to the concerns that were brought in here. So we allowed it to go through to the next stage at various different levels in the hope that some of the concerns, not only the ones that were raised by Sinn Féin, but also those that were raised by other members of the opposition, and by the way, some Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil backbenchers. But unfortunately, no amendments that were raised by the opposition have been taken into account.
What concerns would the opposition have then? What concerns did you raise?
Okay, well, one of them I said that it is disproportionate, right? And there are sections of the bill which raise, that there are aggravating factors, and it extends down to including hate crime for public order offences. Okay, and I'll give you an example of that. Let's say you're out in Athy or Naas and you're after a few drinks, and you meet someone on the street, right? And they bump into you and they call you a name which is not a protected characteristic type name. They say something about a member of your family. It's deeply upsetting. And you look at them and you think, or you might be wrong, but they are of colour, or do you think they might be of a particular background, and you give them threatening, abusive or insulting words or behaviour under the Public Order Act, then the guards are there and both of you could be charged with that. But you could be the one charged with a hate crime, whereas the other person is charged with a regular public order offence.
Right. I
attended Naas Court on a number of occasions when I was working in Dublin. Yeah. I believe that it's disproportionate to label usually a young male who will come before the court with a hate crime at such a, you know, at such a young age. I think it's disproportionate. Whatever, I accept that there's a need for, let's say, criminal damage, assault, and arson, those type of offences, but bringing it down to that level. And there's another point then.
I'll come back to you on that. Barry Ward, Sinn Féin saying now that this is disproportionate. What's your reaction and the response of the government and Fine Gael?
Well, the reality is that what the circumstance of past talking about would not lead to a conviction under this bill, which would create a new Section 6A in the Public Order Act. What the bill says very clearly is, in order for it to be a hate crime, it must be a crime that is motivated by hate. So if you're reacting to somebody who's thrown a slur at you in the street, that is not a crime that is motivated by hate. That is a crime that is motivated by reacting to that slur. And, of course, it's inappropriate if people use particular racial slurs or anything like that and reacting to that, but it doesn't constitute a crime motivated by hate. It's a reactionary crime. And there is a distinction between the two. And this is the difficulty with a lot of what Sinn Féin and others have been saying in opposition to this bill. It's not grounded in reality. And I practice as a criminal barrister. I've defended cases involving public order incidents and prosecuted them as well. The reality is that the crime at the heart there is the public disorder, if you like. And what this bill is trying to do is say, when you start that public disorder motivated out of a particular hatred or seeking to incite hatred against a particular group, that is a different category of crime. And the reality is that is already an aggravating factor in sentence in the courts today. This is just putting it on a statutory footing and creating a specific distinct offence from the ordinary simple public disorder. But an obvious example of it will be what we saw in Dublin in November, for example, when a lot of that disorder was not something that was reactionary, was not something that was just bad behaviour or just criminal activity. It was specifically targeted at particular groups. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to deal with this legislation.
Pat, some of the accusations that have been levelled at Sinn Féin is that they supported this and then they kind of stuck their finger out in the wind to see what way the wind was blowing, realised it might not actually be as popular as some people are saying, and now have decided to go against it. What would you say to that?
No, absolutely not. And if I could just come back on that point about Barry is making, under Section 18 of the bill, where in aggravating offences or aggravation of offences by hatred, there's a section in there which says that in the course of committing the offence, a person demonstrates hatred towards the victim. So that's open to interpretation, and I think that my argument in relation to the public order side of things is valid. I don't agree with you, in relation to putting the finger in the wind. We have at all stages raised concerns about this, and anybody who is in the Justice Committee or who is in the debate in the Dáil will know that we have been raising these points, and not just us, other members of the opposition as well. There's another point in relation to the Section 10 of this new bill, and we've introduced amendments to make it stronger, because it's subsection 3 of that says that this is the offence of preparing or possessing material likely to incite violence or hatred. But there's a lot of assuming and presuming in it. It's the incident where you haven't actually distributed any offending material, but it's on your computer or you have it in your possession. Mm. But they say in the bill that it's reasonable to assume that it was not intended for personal use, and then you're presumed that you're going to be in contravention of subsection 1. Now,
okay.
I feel, and I'm going to make a bold prediction here, that the minister will make amendments in relation to that, but let's wait and see. Although it's hard to believe at this stage, because it was raised time and time again, this section was raised, and no amendments were introduced, apart from the government bringing in some quite technical amendments.
Okay,
and
I want to ask one final point to you, Pat, yeah, before I go back to Barry Ward. Just to be clear, Sinn Féin, are you in favour of a hate speech bill, and you're unhappy with some of what the government are bringing forward here, or are you now saying that there's no need for hate speech legislation? What's Sinn Féin's position?
Well, what I'm saying is that this bill, as it stands at the moment, is not fit for purpose. And we have given the government every chance. Not only was there about 6 or 7 or 8, I think, stages of this bill going through the Oireachtas, but there was also pre-legislative scrutiny. There was also the heads of bill which came before the Justice Committee and was debated there. And when I'm talking to people like Patricia Ryan, TD, and Raida Conan, they have important issues in Kildare to be bringing to me, and this has only been a distraction.
Of course. Sinn Féin were in government, would you bring forward a hate speech bill or hate speech legislation?
Well, we've been listening to a lot of the groups, and I have on my desk here a message from the international students, and listening to what they have been suffering over the years. I think it'd probably be more appropriate at this stage to amend parts of the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act or parts of the Criminal Damage Act, and to strengthen those up to have maybe specific or aggravating offences which deal with those serious assaults. We can't have people who are LGBT battered on buses and not facing consequences.
Right, so that is a U-turn because I think coming up to the elections, the general elections, in the Sinn Féin kind of manifesto, it was said that you would introduce hate speech, very strong hate speech legislation. So that's a U-turn.
There's a way to do it, but the way that the government have implemented, bullishly pushing ahead, not listening to the concerns that have been raised by not only by us, but by human rights groups like the ICCL have concerns as well. Didn't listen to any of those. This is not the way to do it. But let's wait and see what the minister comes back with, because there seems to be mixed messages coming from government. Simon Harris saying that he's not going to scrap it, and Helen McEntee saying that there will be amendments coming through. When? We don't know. Maybe they're going to spin it out until after the election. We don't know.
Senator Barry Ward, to bring you back in then, and the point there the PA is making is that this is not supported by all of government. We've seen some Fianna Fáil TDs, backbenchers, coming out saying that amendments need to be made, some even saying that this needs to be scrapped altogether, and then maybe mixed messaging, as PA has put it, from Simon Harris and Helen McEntee. This doesn't really have all government support, does it?
Well, PA appears to be something of an authority on mixed messaging, given that he started the interview by saying that there did need to be hate crime legislation. Now he's saying that actually he's going to roll back on that and just amend other pieces of legislation. What's most extraordinary about this is that in one breath PA said, well, we need to get rid of it, we need to stop it, and the other breath he's saying, well, let's wait and see what the minister is going to come forward with, that there are mixed messages. There are no mixed messages. There are individual TDs who are members of parties that are in government who have expressed opposition to aspects of the bill. But that is something that I think is healthy in any political party, that there'll be people who'll be able to express dissent. It may not happen quite as much in Sinn Féin, but within Fine Gael we welcome people who are able to dissent against the prevailing view. But the minister is now engaged in a process where she has said, I'm going to take on board what people have said in opposition to this legislation. People who, by the way, may have stated that opposition but never voted against it, which I think is a fundamental contradiction. PA says that they indicated that they would oppose it. I don't necessarily accept that, but it was open to them to vote against it if they felt that strongly, and they didn't. And can I address the concern that he's raised in relation to Section 10, where he's essentially suggesting that somehow it'll be up to a defendant to prove that they didn't commit a hate crime? That's not what's there at all. What is in Section 10 is a provision that is called in law a rebuttable presumption. It exists in lots of other pieces of legislation. And it's basically a situation where if the Gardaí were to find in your car, for example, 20,000 leaflets to be distributed in Mace, let's say, saying let's burn out the direct provision centres or something like that, they don't have to wait for you to actually go out onto the main street in Mace and distribute those leaflets before you've committed a crime. And that's the reason that's there. And by the way, it exists. An obvious example is Section 15 of the Theft and Fraud Offences Act, which says that basically if you're walking through the street at night and you have in your bag a screwdriver and a crowbar and a few other implements that could reasonably be assumed to be used in connection with burglary, and you live 10 miles away and you've no excuse for being there, there is a rebuttable presumption that you are there for a nefarious purpose. Okay. That exists already in legislation. Sinn Féin are complaining about that, but when it comes to hate crime, where it might be unpopular and where people might be able to criticise Sinn Féin, they suddenly think that this is disproportionate.
I'm sure
can I come back in on that there?
Very briefly, Pat.
Yeah, first of all, I never said that it was up to the defendant to prove anything. That would be turning the criminal justice system upside down. However, what I did say is that in this bill, there is assuming and presuming comes into it, and I don't think that that is good enough. We actually introduced an amendment where it says, where you have the material with a view to it being communicated, we said that it should be stronger than that. It should say, actually, that there should be a clear and serious intention shown of communicating the material, which would be more compliant with the regular criminal justice system. And if Fine Gael would have more credibility on this about the idea that they might actually introduce amendments, because about 18 months ago, when it was in the Justice Committee, they said that they would... I'm sure the minister will listen, they will examine and reflect. And now they're saying the exact same thing 18 years later. So I don't know exactly what Fine Gael are up to with this.
I'm sure the debate will continue and we'll be covering it in more detail as time goes on here on KFM. But that is Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson for Justice, Pat Daly, and Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward, Vice Chair of the Oireachtas Justice Committee. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, welcome back. Well, this Easter, Irish residents are expected to recycle over 62,000 tonnes of packaging waste, a 1.8% increase on the 60,900 tonnes recycled in 2023. Easter marks one of the busiest times of the year across the country for waste recovery operators, which is why it's so important that all packaging, including cardboard boxes, plastic moulds, chocolate trays and clean tin foil, are all placed in the recycling bin, clean, dry and loose. Laura Sherry is on the line, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack. Laura, good morning. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
One of the busiest times of the year, I'm sure, Easter along with Christmas, when you see all that packaging waste that has to be recycled.
Yeah, exactly. 80% of us expect to indulge in a milk, chocolate, Easter egg. We're pretty confident. 88% of us are confident in our packaging recycling abilities. However, confidence is only at about 52%. So we really, only about half of us really know what belongs in the recycling bin. So 88% say we're confident, but really when we got into the research, we surveyed 1,000 adults in Ireland on their Easter spending, their recycling habits and knowledge of what can be recycled. And actually only 52% are really confident that we know what goes into the recycling bin. So it's really important to segregate your packaging in your recycling bin. We're really asking for kind of one simple action over the Easter period. We know there's going to be an increase of packaging. So segregate your packaging properly, clean, dry and loose. That's our motto. So make sure that it's clean, not contaminated with other materials. If you have liquids in your materials, just make sure that they're, or food, just make sure that they're cleaned out, dry, that they're not wet and loose. Don't put packaging materials into boxes or your cornflakes boxes or your other different kind of cereal boxes. You know, keep them loose. Don't put them into bags as well, or tie them. Just make sure all the materials are loose in your recycling bin.
Yeah, and Easter egg is kind of a good example of keeping things loose, because oftentimes you hear people say that, well, I'm trying to get as much as I can into the recycling bin, so I'll put bottles and other pieces of paper into a cardboard box and then put that into the recycling bin. But that's counterintuitive. So if you get an Easter egg, don't put everything back into the box. You have to separate it and then recycle. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Keep it all loose as much as you can. And when we look at the tin foil, you know, make sure that it's clean. That's going to be around the house definitely over the Easter holidays with all the Easter eggs that are going to come into the house. But keep your tin foil clean. Make sure there's no chocolate on it. Squunch it up into a ball. The machines and the recycling facilities actually can detect it better. You're going to have your hard plastic molds or any sort of hard plastic that's come into the house. They can all go into your recycling bin. And don't forget about your soft plastics. So soft plastics are anything that you can squunch up into your hand. They can all go into your recycling bin now. The old age traditions are still popular. You know, gifting of Easter eggs remains the top with over a third, 37% planning to buy between 3 to 5 chocolate eggs. Definitely a few for ourselves. I don't know if you've bought any yet, have you?
Have already, and a few listeners have given me Toblerone eggs as well, which I'm delighted about. And we're going to be giving away a couple of Easter eggs in the second hour of the programme as well, so we'll have to make sure that the listeners, whoever wins them, make sure to recycle them properly as well. But also, I know yourselves at Repack have shared some top tips to help people reimagine their waste this Easter. So aside from just recycling, maybe reusing bits and pieces, particularly for the children over the midterm break.
Definitely. If you're looking for things to do with your kids, we're getting people, asking people to reimagine their Easter egg boxes. These can be used for arts and crafts. Make sure the egg cartons are clean, dry and placed loosely. So again, that's the motto, clean, dry and loose, into the recycling bin when disposing of them. Chocolate trays and rigid plastics, they can be placed in your recycling bin once you enjoy that last piece of chocolate. And cardboard boxes, place them clean, dry and loose. But again, just think of any arts and crafts that can be used with the kids over the Easter break if you're looking for activities to do with them.
Just before we let you go, Laura, to talk generally about recycling habits, obviously it's been in the news quite a lot over the last year or so. Have we gotten better, do you feel, at recycling or knowing what goes where and what can and can't be recycled? Because it was actually, I think, only talking to you or one of your colleagues recently that I found out the tinfoil, aluminium, which will be on the Easter eggs, can be recycled. So maybe more needs to be done in terms of disseminating information publicly.
Definitely. And from our research that we've just conducted at Easter, and which is mainly around Easter egg packaging, but other research that we conducted independently in February, we found that we have great knowledge of what bins are in the house. You know, everyone has access to bins and they understand recycling and the concepts. But actually, when we get into the behaviour of people really understanding what goes into which bin, there's a lot of confusion. So we're really going to work hard this year on trying to encourage people to really change behaviours. One simple action: segregate your packaging properly and to try and educate them about what materials can go into the recycling bin.
Yeah, and just similarly as well in the brown bin, another thing that I found out is that paper, and if you say get a Chinese takeaway, that paper bag can be put into the brown bin as well. So look, you learn something new every day. You can get more information over on the Repack website and on their social media as well, but just urging people to be conscious of recycling, as Ireland is expected to recycle over 62,000 tonnes of packaging this Easter. Laura Sherry, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack. Thanks for your time, Laura.
Thanks so much.
We're going to be catching up on a few more messages in just a moment, but I want to move on because the Financial Services and Pensions Ombudsman has published an overview of complaints for 2023, detailing the work of the office in resolving complaints from consumers and small businesses or organisations against financial service providers and pension providers. Deputy Ombudsman Mary Rose McGovern joins us now. Mary Rose, welcome to the programme. And interestingly, Kildare ranked third highest county for complaints in this particular area. In general, it increased by 48% in 2023.
Indeed. Good morning, Owen, and nice to talk to you. Yes, Kildare was our third highest number in terms of county across the counties of Ireland. And look, we know that there's a growing population in Kildare, but it's not just about that. The FSPO across the the whole country received more than 30% complaints in 2023 than we did in 2022. And we're a bit disappointed with that. And we know that with the best will in the world, sometimes things will go wrong. And when they do go wrong, we really want and we expect the financial service provider to do its very best to put things right for its own customer without the customer having to come as far as the FSPO. With that sort of increase, in many counties across Ireland, we believe that providers could do better to resolve the complaints that they receive. And, you know, I'd ask providers to really think about that. With about 24% of what we're seeing involving customer service complaints, what's going wrong? Are their complaints teams adequate? So when somebody has a complaint about, you know, whether it's a mortgage, a current account, credit card account, private health insurance, travel insurance, motor insurance, what are providers doing to get in there early and try to resolve those complaints?
So 6,182 complaints received across the country. What kind of a breakdown then can you give us as to what those complaints were actually about?
Well, we see that 62% in 2023 concerned banking products and services, and that's really very high. We tend to receive banking complaints more than anything else, but it's reached an all-time high at 62% of everything that we're seeing. When we receive those complaints, we try to move very swiftly to resolve them using our mediation team, and we get some really good results there with those early interventions. And in 2023, we resolved more than 80% of complaints informally, either during the registration process or during mediation. And you may have noticed from our overview that more than 2,000 complaints were resolved in mediation, and the financial benefit to those customers reached almost €3 million.
Yeah, 24% of complaints concerned customer service issues, with conduct complained of most. 80% of complaints were made in the Republic, 20% made from overseas, and as you say, the banking sector making up 62%. Ideally, though, I'm sure you would want these issues to be resolved at source. So if somebody has an issue with a bank, for example, try and sort it out with the bank first. But if you can't sort it out, then contact yourselves at the FSPO.
Exactly. And, you know, we see certain trends where we're it's very disappointing to see that the contribution of fraud and scams to the nature of the complaints that we're seeing continues to rise. It's very worrying for people, and they're becoming more and more sophisticated, those tricks that, you know, that lure people in to lose their money. And it typically involves people who are under pressure. And frankly, every single one of us can fall for these scams because they are so sophisticated. But to give you an example, Eileen, and that's not her real name, obviously, it was an elderly lady. She was 80 years old and she had a disabled husband at home, and she was looking for assistance to care for him. And she found what she thought was the ideal person, who was abroad and would need some money for visa purposes to get them to travel to Ireland. And she started sending money to that person. But she enlisted the assistance of her bank to get that money sent abroad. And in fact, she visited her branch 22 times and ended up sending a total of €82,000 to that person. You know, this is real money. This is a real person. And when she finally realised that she'd been a victim of a scam and there was no sign of this care worker coming to Ireland, she reported the scam to her bank. Now, that complaint was resolved during one of our early interventions, and because of the number of visits to the branch by Eileen and because of the assistance that the staff had given her, I think the bank felt that perhaps it could have done more to maybe ask her questions about what the money was for, where it was going. So the bank agreed to repay that money into her account. So that was a very happy outcome for Eileen. But it doesn't always involve huge amounts of money. You know, we know, see another example of Bernard, who made a complaint to this office because he'd received a letter from his insurance company saying that his direct debit had failed for his motor insurance policy. And he was pretty annoyed because he was pretty good at paying his insurance premium. So he contacted the insurance company and said, look, what's going on here? And he was essentially told not to worry. And then shortly afterwards, he got another letter saying that his policy of insurance was going to be cancelled. And in fact, he'd be reported to the Gardaí for having no valid insurance on his vehicle. So you can imagine how annoyed he was. Now, that complaint was not resolved in mediation, but when it moved to the formal investigation process and when we started asking questions of the provider, it agreed to sort of put its hands up and said, look, we'll offer Bernard a little bit more. And he was happy to accept the resolution of his complaint for a sum of €500. So that gives you the sort of an idea as to what's involved. And may I also mention that we have a new area on our website at www.fspo.ie, which we launched about 10 days ago for Global Money Week, and that includes some really helpful information about the sort of frauds and scams that tend to trick people into handing over their hard-earned money. So if your listeners are interested, they can visit that. And there's also lots of resources on our website. We publish reports on travel insurance and we publish reports on private health insurance. So it'll give your listeners an idea as to the sort of scenarios where people encounter difficulties and they may end up having to make a complaint.
Well, listen, keep up the great work. Indeed, Kildare ranked third highest for financial service and pension complaints in 2023. 283 complaints, which is a 48% rise last year, and Mary Rose McGovern is Deputy Ombudsman. Thanks for joining us, Mary Rose, and good morning.